I really want you to know that it's not as intense as people might think. I think because I have the YouTube channel, the blog, the podcast, people think I'm just like working all day. And then because I cook from scratch, they also think like all day long you must be in your kitchen. I spend a lot of time in my kitchen, but I also have gotten very familiar with how to throw together a meal, how to throw together easy from scratch meals, how to make sourdough to where it doesn't really take me very much time to get that accomplished. All that to say, I'm not as scheduled as people might think.
My name is Lisa, mother of 8 and creator of the blog and YouTube channel Farmhouse on Boone. Join me as I share with you my love for creating a handmade home from scratch cooking and a little mom and entrepreneur life along the way.
Welcome back to the Simple Farmhouse Life podcast. If you are watching over on YouTube, I'm in my old recording studio back in the cottage. I haven't been in here since before I had the baby. He is now napping in his swing, and so I have gotten kicked out of my room and I'm back here. So, you know, things change based on the seasons for a lot of reasons, weather seasons and also the babies that we're having. And so right now I'm back and forth, but this is where I can get a quiet spot today. So I'm going to be shooting a Q&A solo episode today. I have a whole list of questions that you submitted via YouTube, Instagram, and then also my question box that I have been putting up on a lot of different episodes. If you aren't on some of those platforms, you can head over to bit.ly/SFL questions, SFL questions. And I'm going to be doing, I think my plan roughly is about every third episode to do a solo episode this year, just because there's a lot of questions I get all the time. And I thought that that would be a really good way to address them, or even just topics that you want me to expand on. I'll be doing it in this format. So let's dive in. I'm going to go ahead and grab some of these questions. Okay. So I don't know that I've really collected these particular questions together in any kind of organized way. I'm going to take just like a very random Q&A, but we are going to do throughout this year, throughout 2024, a few more topical, like all sourdough questions or maybe other topics as well. Today, I'm just going random, which I enjoy listening to these sometimes from other creators. So we're going to go with it. All right, how do you celebrate birthdays for your kids? We have 4 kids, and lately the last 2 years have been foregoing large gatherings and just doing small family birthdays with my husband, boys, maybe grandparents if available. Torn on it, are we ripping the boys off of big birthday bashes? Curious to know what others' take is. So currently, this changes based on kids and what they're interested in, and then also like what we're doing at that time of the year. I will tell you and give you permission that it's okay if you're not doing big birthday bashes, if you can't right now in this season, or if you just simply, it's not a priority. With everything that you do ever, there's always something else that you're giving up. So if it's really stressful for you to do a birthday bash, then I'd say you're allowed to not do it. I think it's great to make something special. So some of the ways that we do it, we don't have like themed birthday parties where I like come up with a certain cake, or, you know, I wouldn't even do balloons. A lot of times the way it'll work is on somebody's birthday morning, we will make them something special like pancakes or waffles. I mean, that's not really that special, but just usually just not like eggs or something. And then maybe if the day is right, you know, I'll make them something that they want for lunch. Typically, since I have a large family, I have a lot of nieces and nephews and sisters. We will just, with my family, celebrate monthly birthdays. So like we just did all the January birthdays where my mom got an ice cream cake and we celebrated the people born in January. We have that every month of the year. And for the most part, that's what the kids get. Now, sometimes they'll have a special request, like the boys want to go paintballing, or one of my daughters wanted to go shopping all day. For one of my daughter's birthdays, she really wanted to go to the City Museum. It's something that they have in St. Louis. So my sister and I took our daughters and then one other friend to the City Museum. So that was like 4 girls. We went out to lunch, we went to the City Museum. So I don't know. We don't have like a set thing. We kind of just do whatever is working. Like if we're going to be on vacation. So my one son, both this year and last, we were on vacation during his birthday because it just falls when we would do that. And so that's just, you know, we'll do something maybe a little special while we're there, but it's okay. Like we're not going to cancel our family vacation so that way we can be home for his birthday. It's not something that I worry a ton about. And I don't think that you're ruining them. I think if you are depriving them or whatever, the way you asked it, but I think, you know, definitely acknowledge their birthday and, you know, say happy birthday, maybe make them a special breakfast. But if that's the most you can get done, I think that that's totally fine. Okay. Could you walk us through your daily routine? What time do you wake up / go to bed in order to accomplish so much every day? So I don't really feel like I get as much accomplished as people think that I do. As far as my business goes, I have a team of people who help me do so much. So like for this podcast, I have a podcast manager who will edit it and upload it and create a reel for it and even copy for the email list to promote this episode. So there are just so many things that I don't do. Like I have writers in my blog. I have just a team of people helping me with a lot of things. So as far as like what I get done with the family, because obviously I am cooking from scratch, I am homeschooling, we do have a homestead. I don't find that with the way that we have managed our schedule, anything is really that intense. So we don't have a whole lot of outside obligations. We don't really do much in the way of sports. We try not to leave our homestead very often so that way we can get done a lot of the things that we want to get done. But as far as like set bedtime, set wake up time, I don't have that because right now I have a 6-month-old. He still wakes up all throughout the night. So I just sleep to whenever I can. Like if he wakes up at 4, like this morning, literally this morning, for whatever reason, he was up between 4 and 5 and then he was tired again. I nursed him back to sleep and I slept quite a bit later. And then I even handed him off to Luke around like 6:30 so I could sleep even more because we just had a lot of uptime in the middle of the night. And I wanted to not be so tired. So I don't have a set wake up time. I think that that is reserved for people who are beyond the baby years, which I haven't been in 15 years. So whenever you see people's morning routines and, you know, they get up at this time and then I do this and this, I don't have that. It's more of like, I get up, I have some coffee, I sit there for a while, usually with a couple kids on my lap, and then I'll start to make breakfast, but we can do breakfast and school at the same time. So nothing really feels quite so intense as people maybe think, but that's because I have a whole day to get done these things. I don't have to fit school into any certain exact times. I don't have to fit my work into any exact times. We do have a rhythm and it changes throughout the seasons. Like right now I'm recording this podcast because Victor is sleeping. My daughter's in the house listening for him, but it kind of just really depends, and I really want you to know that it's not as intense as people might think. I think because I have the YouTube channel, the blog, the podcast, people think I'm just like working all day. And then because I cook from scratch, they also think like all day long you must be in your kitchen. I spend a lot of time in my kitchen, but I also have gotten very familiar with how to throw together a meal, how to throw together easy from scratch meals, how to make sourdough to where it doesn't really take me very much time to get that accomplished. And then also my husband's home. So he's playing with some kids in the woods right now while I record this podcast. He also manages the farm pretty much entirely. I don't have to really worry about that at all. And he also helps me tag team homeschool and a lot of other things. So all that to say, I'm not as scheduled as people might think. I do have my business planned out in a pretty scheduled way. So I have a Trello board, which is an online app that helps you to organize like your tasks for your business. And I have what podcast is coming out, what 2 blog posts and what video for the next, like all the way through May. So I keep that pretty scheduled out and pretty planned, but what I have to actually do to get that accomplished each day isn't all that intense. How do you stay consistent in business when new ideas come up all the time? How do you avoid switching gears or adding on too much? This is not something I've always been excellent at. I have figured out over the years what is worth pursuing and what isn't. And I will say that I get the shiny object syndrome every once in a while too, but I'm finally in a good place in the last couple of years where I've figured out what things to let go. So I think my answer for that is just, once you get going and trying certain things, it almost just takes experience to figure out what will work for you, what will work for your personality, your schedule. One thing that I've pretty majorly let go is Instagram. I do have somebody who helps make reels from my YouTube videos, but I no longer think about Instagram content in any way. It doesn't take up any brain space for me. It's just my Instagram person, which she is absolutely amazing. So she comes up with some really great ideas. She'll take the footage I made for YouTube, chop it up into some kind of idea or just take things that I said throughout it and make that into a reel. But if she didn't, if she didn't want to do that, I'd probably hire somebody else. But if I couldn't find anybody to do it at all, I would not probably even do it. So, you know, you have to figure out what works for you. And for me, the daily showing up on Instagram is very difficult for me. I find it challenging to share my life in real time. And so that is something that, even though it's a really great place to market, is not something that I would devote a whole lot of my time to. I'm so glad for my Instagram girl, though, because I think it'd be really hard to find somebody who comes up with ideas like she does. But there's just a lot of things like TikTok. I put reels up there, but I don't think about it. Or actually, my Instagram person puts my reels onto TikTok, but I don't devote any brain space to it. And that's, I think, the major thing is with a content creation business, even though you hire people to help you, if you have to come up with all of the ideas, there's just too much going on in your brain. And so you have to figure out what things work best for your personality, your revenue, your family life, work-life balance, and just go with that.
All right, taking a quick break from this episode to tell you about my brand new course, Simple Sourdough. This one has been a long time coming. I have shared about sourdough over on my blog and my YouTube channel forever, but I finally compiled all of the information that you need to be successful with sourdough, the starter, making your first ever loaves of bread, using the discard, so many things in my course, Simple Sourdough. You can find it at bit.ly/farmhousesourdoughcourse. That's all one word, bit.ly/farmhousesourdoughcourse. The coolest thing about the new Simple Sourdough course is that there's a corresponding private Facebook group that is for students only. I'm really excited that that'll be a place where when you have specific questions, there'll be other students in there, sourdough enthusiasts, and we can all learn from each other. This is usually such a valuable asset because a lot of times you'll have a specific question that you don't want to filter back through the course for. It's all there, but sometimes you just want other people who are on the same journey as you. And I'm really excited to provide that course, which just the lifetime membership comes with the purchase of the Simple Sourdough course. Again, you can find that at bit.ly/farmhousesourdoughcourse.
But how do I stay consistent in business? Well, as far as like new ideas, I have long lists of ideas in my phone. I have a ideas for blog list, which are for vlogs list. And that is where I just keep track of like title and thumbnail ideas that I'm thinking about. That would be for YouTube. And then in my Trello board, we do a lot of keyword research. And so we keep track of blog ideas there based on what people are searching for. And then I also will keep individual lists. So I use the Notes app on my phone for just about everything. I will keep individual lists in my Notes app of videos I'm currently working on. So usually I'm thinking about 3 or 4 videos, even though I only shoot one per week. And whenever I come up with an idea, like I'll think of a new recipe or I'll come up with something I want to redecorate in my home or some kind of project I want to organize, I will jot that down in the note dedicated to that video. And then once it's actually time to shoot the video, usually there's enough ideas collected together for me to just finish up thinking about it, fill it in a little bit more, and then go on with the video. So I'll pull from my ideas for vlog title and thumbnail idea, some concept, put it into that note specifically for that video, and then it'll have a list of shots and projects and ideas in that. So hopefully that makes sense, but I'll keep a specific note for each new idea. And as something comes up, I'll just drop it into that video. And then I know where to actually use the idea. Because I agree with you, as a business owner, especially a content creator, you're always thinking of new ideas, but then knowing where to actually use them and implement them is probably the tricky part. And so that's why I'll create a note for a video idea and just drop it in there. And that's where I'm going to use it. Don't have to overthink it. And that's one thing too, I think is a major pitfall with content creation businesses is overthinking everything. I try to just keep going. I'm doing one video a week. So whatever I can think of right now is what I'm going to shoot and just keep moving with that. Okay. How do you remember to make time for the littler ones when the older kids' needs seem more pressing? So the thing about little kids is they don't let their needs go unmet. I have kids, pretty much the 6 and under kids, crawl on my lap in the morning, throughout the day. Literally, my two-year-old will just say, "Mom, I need you." And that just means like hold me and carry me around with you for a while. And that is the extent of what they usually need, is a lot of physical affection. You know, obviously they need like food and all that good stuff. And that happens in a large family just by, or any family size, just by cooking and sitting down for a meal together. But the little kids need more of that physical affection. And they don't really let me forget about it because, well, especially my current two-year-old, he just would never let you forget about that. So they just demand it, you know? And a lot of times all he needs from me is for me to hold him on my lap while I'm helping the older kids with something or talking to them about something. So I guess that's just my short answer, is they don't let you. Even if you wanted to forget about it, they wouldn't let you. So that works out really well. Same with the baby. When he's hungry, when he, you know, he needs me to nurse him. When he's tired, he needs me to nurse him to sleep and place him in the little swing that he's currently sleeping in. That won't last forever, but that's what works right now. And so, you know, nobody else can do that for him. And so it's something that only I can do. Okay. I talk about this a lot, but I'll answer it anyway, is at least as concise as I can. How would you compare being younger with one or two children to your phase in life now? What's easier? What's harder? How being debt-free has mattered, learning more recipes and getting into more routines and how that's helped. So it is just so different. The phase of life that I'm in now versus when I had a couple of little children, in a lot of ways that was easier. In a lot of ways, this is easier. I will say the reason that what I'm in now would be easier is just because of all the things that I've learned that have helped to make it easier, not necessarily the demands of me. The demands are for sure harder at this point. I mean, undoubtedly, more people need me. There's more places to be, more kids to talk to. I actually have something upcoming where Luke will be going with the oldest four somewhere, and I'm going to be home with the youngest four. And in some ways, that is going to be a lot easier because with little kids, you really can put them on like a very precise schedule. You know exactly what to expect of them. Like, I will have them in bed at a certain time. The house will be quiet. I'll have it all to myself. During the day, you know, these kids are all young enough that we wouldn't really have to worry about homeschool. So we could leave for the day, strap them in the van. I could go through Starbucks and then take them to a park and push them around in a stroller. It's just so much different than what I have going on with older kids. You can't go through Starbucks because, you know, everybody's going to want their own coffee, which we do that sometimes for the older kids, or just anything, not just Starbucks. But there's a lot with older kids where, you know, they have their own things they need you to help them with. They stay up later. And it's all great. It's all beautiful. It's just all so different. And so I think that it's just so hard to compare. But I will say that whenever you're new at everything, like my hardest transition was always, I always say, was 0 to 1, because I just didn't know what all would be required of me to have little kids. But now that I've gotten more used to how to throw a meal together without any mental effort, what kids need as far as naps, and when they're tired, knowing those cues to put them down so they're not super fussy, I feel like a lot of things have become easier because of the knowledge I've gained over the years. So in some ways, this season's a lot easier because of that. Also, I have helpers, which is just really something. If something gets really overwhelming, like I'm trying to get 2 or 3 kids into bed, you know, the baby's fussing and I need to read the older kid, like the 6 and 4-year-old, a book, but then the toddler is too tired. He needs a book. If that situation happens, then I can have one of my teenagers or my husband step in and take one of those, you know, while I'm dealing with the others. And so that's really nice. And that's something that whenever you're just in the thick of it with only little kids, you don't have that backup if all else fails, whereas I now do. And so there are a lot of things about it that are a lot easier. Plus, with a lot of kids, they really play with each other. Like today, they have some kind of game going on in the woods that they're all very excited about. And so they are their own little unit and community just playing with each other that, you know, I don't have to like give them something to do or something to be excited about. They're already doing that all on their own. And that makes definitely everything really, really easy. So I guess I can't answer, because in some ways that is. And in some ways this is, it's just very, very, very different. I didn't realize that whenever I was a young mom. And by the way, I must say, I loved that period in life and I think about it. And sometimes I mourn that, like, just that was such a sweet, sweet time in life with just like a couple of little kids. And, you know, they, even if I didn't have more kids, they wouldn't be little, they'd be teenagers now. And so no matter what you do, no matter if you have a lot of kids or few, that season of life does end. And so if it feels hard to you, know that it will end and you will look back and want it back in some ways. So on a bit of a different topic, did you tandem nurse any of your babies? If so, tips. If not, how soon before the birth did you wean? So I did not tandem nurse any of my babies. And I apologize, I have to keep adjusting the light in here. The sun keeps going like in and out. But I didn't tandem nurse any of my babies. That is not because I didn't want to. I am one of those people where once I'm pregnant, my milk starts to dry up. So that is why every time that I get pregnant, usually I'm still nursing the baby, but sometime around like 15 to 18 months when I'm getting probably like three or four or like halfway through the pregnancy, 3 or 4 months pregnant, typically that will end. So I have never been nursing the baby, I'd say past 20 weeks pregnant. So that is not an experience I have that just doesn't work out for my body, which is why I think my body also delays, you know, the fertility coming back. And I have children that are naturally spaced because apparently I can't do both, which I know a lot of people can. It just never worked out for me. Okay, so this question kind of goes with one I was answering earlier. How do you manage all the chores and kids asking you to play with them? So other than the little kids, the 4-year-old and the 2-year-old who do want my attention quite a bit, nobody else really asks me to play with them because they have so many siblings to play with and they have a lot of things that they enjoy doing. They have like all kinds of imaginative things that they enjoy and they're very creative. And so they really do play together so well that I don't end up really playing with the kids. I'll give them attention, but it isn't necessarily like I'm not on the floor playing with them. I know some moms are better about that. I'm not the best mom when it comes to that kind of thing. So I really don't technically play with the kids. I read them books. We have routines built around that. But then as far as like playing a game with them, usually that's something that'll happen more with the siblings. Okay. Do you have much time during the day to sit and rest? I've wondered if you are an energetic person who is just able to stay busy. So I am an energetic person. That's for sure. I come from energetic people. Nobody in my family sits still. We all like maybe watch a show for 30 minutes before we fall asleep at night. Other than that, we're on the go. My mom's like that. My dad's like that. All my sisters are like that. So yes, that is just not hard for me. It's just very natural. I don't need a lot of rest throughout the day. I guess there's just no other way to sugarcoat that one. No, I don't. I do have a lot of energy. Okay. What does spending time with your family look like these days? This is something I've been thinking about a lot lately because I think a lot of women especially are this way because you do so much in your home. Whenever you're home, sometimes it can be hard to relax. And this probably goes with the last question a bit, maybe personality based. It's probably harder for me than some, but when I'm home, I have a million things I want to do. If I run out of stuff to do, I'll think of something else to do. And so usually for me, the best way to spend quality time with my family, and this isn't to say that we don't have it at home because we sit down for meals together and that's a time where I can pause and be with the family, but we do best as far as like spending some quality, memorable time together, if we get out of the house. So for example, a lot of times we have one day a week where we go somewhere as a family all day. And because I don't have to worry about any of the household chores, I can just really spend that time engaging with my family. Sometimes we do something called a family adventure day. And this is where we go out and explore maybe a new town, or we'll go to an antique shop and parks. Usually there'll be food involved. Those are really fun and I don't feel any obligation to work in any way or organize something or cook something. And so that's a good way for us to spend quality family time together. And then we're trying out planning a few trips. So We recently dried off the cow, and so we planned a few different homeschool trips that we've been wanting to do. And anytime we're on a trip like that, like we just got back from the Creation Museum and the Ark Encounter in Kentucky, I don't have anything I'm worrying about as far as the business goes or as far as the house. And so I'm able to spend some really quality time with the family because that's all we're thinking about. So I like little trips like that, little days out like that. And then also just spending three meals a day together around the table is really good for quality time. Of course, we homeschool, so there's reading time, but I really love those days where there's no expectation of like having to check off this certain curriculum or book or even getting the job done of eating. Not that that's, you know, it should be a very relaxed time, but with toddlers, sometimes that's not even necessarily the most relaxed, but I'd say those are kind of my favorite ways to spend time with my family. Okay, this one is an interesting question because it's something we've been thinking about more lately, but do you and your husband see yourselves on the homestead in 20 years? So as far as homesteading in general, probably to some capacity, I don't know if I see us on this homestead in 20 years. So when we bought this place over 5 years ago, people constantly ask me, is this your forever home? And I always said that I don't say forever home because I just don't know what will happen, how things will change. I'm very realistic to the fact that what one like works for one season of life doesn't always work for the next season of life. And we have been thinking more and more about at some point expanding. Now, do we have something in mind necessarily or like a property that we've bought? No. So that isn't something that we currently have, but we definitely have been talking more and more about potentially this probably will not be our forever home. And I never really thought it would. I know that will come as a surprise to some people, but I did say that even back when we bought it, that I never knew for sure if it would. Like I wasn't ruling it out at that point, but I can say at this point that it likely won't be. I don't have any particular plans in mind. I mean, we have like a direction, but we don't have anything set in stone or anything purchased or picked out at this point. I want to take a quick break to tell you about my blogging masterclass. So 7, almost 8 years ago, I bought the domain farmhouseonboone.com and started posting on a blog. Since then, I have learned so much. The first several years was just me figuring out what to post, lots of light bulb moments. Spoiler alert, it's no longer a journal where you share what your family's doing and what you're working on. Blogging is a whole different strategy. A lot of people think that blogging is dead, but it is far from dead. It's actually the most profitable part of our business is blogging. So it is by no means dead, but it does require a whole different strategy. And I see a lot of people making a lot of mistakes, even some seasoned bloggers who aren't aware of like how blogging has changed. That is why I have my free masterclass where I show you my 4-step framework that I use for becoming a full-time blogger. So for over 5 years now, my husband's been home. We've made blogging a full-time income. And you can find that masterclass over at bit.ly/farmhouseblogging school. All one word, all lowercase, bit.ly/farmhouseblogging school. Please discuss how you transitioned into motherhood. I was an only child, and when I had my first child, I really struggled to adapt/change. Did it come naturally? It did not come naturally for me. I also struggled to adapt to motherhood. Even though I had two little sisters, I went to school, I was in a lot of activities, I had my own life, and so I just wasn't around the home and around like caring for little children. And so I really thought I knew what it would demand of me. And I was surprised to find that it demanded more of me than I had expected. So I do always say that the hardest transition was 0 to 1. I had no clue what I was doing. I have photographs of my daughter sleeping in her high chair and in her little, we have one of those little bouncer things that are like exercise things. And I have photos of her sleeping in both of those. And it's funny because now that wouldn't happen. I know when my children, I know the cues for when they're tired. And so I know when to put them down or put them in the wrap. But at that time, I literally had no idea how much a child was supposed to sleep. And so she was just falling asleep wherever she possibly could. Even when she was little, like not little, 7 weeks or 8 weeks old, I didn't realize that babies sleep like 20 of the 24 hours. And so I'd try to wake her up thinking she would sleep better at night, which is a total disaster. Don't do that. It actually makes them sleep worse. In every way, my lack of knowledge on babies really made the transition very hard. So if you feel like it's very hard, just know that I was right there with you. I had no clue what I was doing. And you can learn on the job and things turn out fine. So my oldest is now 15 and she is fine. Even though I knew nothing about it, she made it through. And by the next child, so by the time I had my 13-year-old, I felt so much more confident. I had found my groove in mothering. I knew what it was, like how I wanted to do it. Of course, I've continued to learn more with each child. It wasn't like I just finally knew everything. But I went into that one with so much more confidence. It was just a total better experience overall with everything. So if you're struggling, just know that for me, the second child was way easier. My sister says the exact same thing. So we're not alone. I know a lot of people say 1 to 2 is the hardest. That's not even close for me. It was definitely 0 to 1. Okay, it's kind of a random question, but how do you baby-proof your house? Or do you baby-proof your house? If so, any ideas on how to do that beautifully? I feel like my house is always a mess because I'm chucking random things in high places to get them away from my toddlers. So I really don't baby-proof my house. And that's mostly because we have such different ages. So at one point we had a gate between the kitchen and the rest of the house. So we could trap in the crawler. I don't currently have a crawler, but in just a very short time here, maybe even by the time this comes out, I will have a crawler. And so maybe that'll make sense for me, but I did find because of all the people in and out that the gate got left open more often than it even made sense to have it there because people would leave it open, then the toddler would get out or the baby. And then it also is really inconvenient for people to go in and out all day because it's such a main thoroughfare in our house for somebody to have to constantly be opening the gate or jumping over the gate. We don't have any other form of baby proofing, and that's just because of the way that so many different ages interact with our home. But what I will say is I don't have anything low enough that really a baby can get into. So little things sitting out like pieces of decor, those are all kept higher. I also just really, really, and I try to emphasize this all the time because of the difference that it made for me as a mother, try to declutter everything that we don't use. It's a constant process. I'm constantly going through things and thinking, do we need this? Is this serving us? And so whenever there's just less things, it can still look really beautiful because there's not piles or things that you're trying to move out of the way. I do try to be pretty minimum with decor type things. Like in the kitchen right now, I have one vase of dried flowers in the middle of the table. So of course a toddler couldn't get to that. I have some dried florals hanging. Nobody can get to that. There's really nothing else except for like just, there's really nothing. There's cabinets. Maybe he'll figure out how to open those because usually my toddlers do or my little crawlers figure that out. But when that happens, I'll typically just put water bottles or something that they can get into that aren't glass in those lower drawers and cabinets, just assuming that they're going to be getting into it. As far as the rest of the house, really nothing decor-wise would be low. So that would be just my tip is if anything you want to keep that's just pretty, try to be very minimal about it. So that way you're not putting piles of things, you know, like taking something that would be a decor piece down low and then having to chuck it in another spot and it builds up and there's piles. That really, of course, isn't going to be a very beautiful way to display things. So keeping it pretty minimal and then keeping things out of reach. But other than that, I mean, I'm kind of in the season of life right now where I don't have anybody getting into anything because my youngest child, other than the baby who isn't crawling, is 2.5. So maybe talk to me in like 3 months. I might have a few more gates up, but right now there's really nothing to speak of as far as baby proofing. Okay, I'll do one more question and we'll save some of these for next time. And again, if you have something that you want answered here, it can be totally random. a lot of these are kind of those same kind of questions I get a lot. People really love to know about the schedule with a large family, fitting everything in, and then also, like, you know, self-care, which I never answer those because I feel like I don't have any good routines really with anything like that. I kind of just, I'm here all day, so I make myself a coffee a couple times a day. I do try to, like, put a few creams on my face, but I don't have, like, self-care routines. I get in the bath a lot, but I get a lot of those same kind of questions. But if you have something just totally random, you can ask that too over at bit.ly/SFL questions with the SFL capitalized. That's case sensitive. Okay, we'll take one of these random questions for the last one. I noticed that you fried French fries at home in lard. How much lard would you say is needed each time you fry enough fries for your whole family? I'm wanting to switch to lard for frying, but don't know if it'll be feasible to do more than once or twice a year with how much I would think I'd need to deep fry with it. So whenever we get a whole hog, we get, what are those, like gallon tubs of lard? I think two of those. The butcher actually will render it for us, which is very nice. The thing about it is you can reuse it a lot. So I put it, you know, in, I'm using my hand motions like you're watching me. Some of you are listening on Spotify or Apple and you can't see me. But I take one of my medium-sized pots and fill it up. I try to take one that's not super big. Like, I wouldn't want to use the large stock pot because then I can't get a very deep layer without using a ton. Take one of the smaller ones, fill it up pretty deep, and then reuse it until, like, the way that I find that it's no longer able to be reused is when there's so much moisture from the potatoes in the oil that they get mushy instead of making like a crisp fry. So that's kind of my metric. But if you put it through a fine mesh strainer and get all the, like, the bits of food out of it after you cook something, so while it's still in its liquid state, and then store it in the fridge. I also store it on the counter, but I just feel like it probably would last longer in the fridge. I don't know. Sometimes I can just go through, like, really long spells of keeping it on the countertop. Either way is fine. You can reuse it because that just lasts a really good long while. So you don't have to get new fresh oil each time. And for me, lard is, especially when I'm getting it as a byproduct of ordering a whole hog from my sister, it's a lot cheaper than frying in something like coconut oil or avocado oil. I also do like to use tallow, but for me, it's more accessible. It's readily available to have lard. Makes a very delicious flavor. We fry chicken in it, and it's just a crucial part of our cooking. I especially prefer to fry in the summer because I can do it outside with our grill, just on like the little side burner. But we totally do it in the fall and winter too. I just sometimes will open a window or whatever. Just, it can get kind of smelly and kind of messy if things pop out, but we enjoy it. And it's a really easy way to serve a side dish. All right, well, I hope that you enjoyed this random Q&A. If there's anything else you want to hear a large family homesteading, homeschooling mom, business owner mom talk about, make sure to submit your questions. And as always, thank you so much for listening. And I will see you in the next episode of the Simple Farmhouse Life podcast.